So check this out. I got word that Hulu threw this crazy party in Beverly Hills with literally all of the biggest reality TV stars. I'm talking about all the Bravolettes, Candy Burris, Portia Williams, James Kennedy, Jax Taylor, even Captain Lee, and Kate Chastain. Here's the genius part. If you want to find out what happened at the party, you have to watch the commercials. Yes, I know I'll be tuning in and then signing up for a free trial to get my favorite reality TV shows at Hulu.com. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who's taught his kids the Sandra Shark verse of Baby Shark. I am Rob's sister, Nino. Hello, everybody. How are you? Welcome to our feedback show here for week number 3. And we've got a really great one today because I'm very excited to bring in our guest who is on the line to talk about everything that's going on here in Winners at War. Great friend of the podcast. Here she is back with us, the great Gabby Pascuzzi. Gabby, how are you?
Hello, I'm great. It is great to be back.
Yes, okay. Gabby, thank you very much for joining us. Very excited to have you back with us to talk about everything that's going on here in season 40. Before we get into anything Survivor related, how are you doing?
I'm great. I think I've moved again since the last time we talked. I move cities like every year.
Yes.
but I'm good. I'm very happy with where I am, which is Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, which mm-hmm. is my favorite city. And life is good. Post Survivor, it's been like 2 years and I am a normal human being once again.
Yeah, you move a lot. That one of our other podcast contributors, Mary Kwiatkowski, talked to us. I didn't know that this was a thing. She says she moves all the time because it's basically a procrastination mechanism of that she can put off anything that she doesn't want to do because she's moving. Is there some sort of a reason why you want to move so much?
Yeah, I've met Mary too. I think it is definitely, maybe it's a millennial thing, but there's just so much out there. So if you aren't happy with your job, you aren't happy with a relationship, you aren't happy with just the city or whatever, you can move. And maybe that's a bit flighty. Maybe that's a bit new school. Maybe some old schoolers wouldn't like that as much. But no, this time I actually moved. I feel like the opposite of procrastination. I moved because I'm in a really happy relationship and we are, you know, becoming more serious. So moving to the same city was the next step. Exactly. So this might be the last move, at least for several years. I'm done procrastinating.
Okay. All right. Well, it is the big move era. So maybe that's why so many people are jumping around so much.
Yes.
Yeah, Gabby, it made me very happy also that you spoke very warmly on Twitter today about your excitement for my last interview with Rupert Boneham.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I can't tell you how honored I am to share a week of commentary, Survivor commentary, with my first childhood Survivor idol. I watched Survivor from the beginning. Before I took a hiatus midway mm-hmm. through, but yeah. I was watching it when it was live at Pearl Islands. I watched live. I was 10 years old and I wrote this on Twitter, but for those people who aren't on Twitter, it was my first Survivor tears were shed when Rupert was voted off. And yeah, what happened was actually I fell asleep during his boot episode and I woke up my mom came and woke me up the next day for school. And the first thing that I asked was like, oh my gosh, who went home last night? I can't believe I fell asleep. And I remember it so vividly. She mm-hmm. was hesitant to tell me because she knew that I would be really upset. And then when she told me, I cried, both because he got voted out and because I missed it. So to be here talking about an all winners season of Survivor, 10, I don't know, how many years later is that? Like 13 yeah. years later. Is mind-blowing to me. 13. I'm not 23 years old. It's 17 years later.
It's okay.
I can't do math.
You say that it's your first Survivor tears. As I was preparing for this, and you make a lot of jokes about the, you know, people would say that you cry all the time on Survivor.
Of course.
And you're a really good sport about that. As I was like going back through these 4 hours of the show, is it fair? Has nobody cried yet on this season?
I think somebody tweeted that at me too, and I was trying to remember. I think Tyson
came the closest,
yeah, which is, so you know what, if Tyson is the first person to cry, I feel like that's like giving a lot of street cred to the criers out there.
All right.
So thanks, Tyson.
So Gabby, can you call it right now? Who will shed the first tears on Survivor Winners at War?
Ooh, I feel like it's got to be somebody with kids maybe that they are missing. So maybe someone on the edge like Amber or, maybe I'll go with that. Or maybe, oh my gosh, wouldn't it be great if it was like Boss and Rob?
Yeah. Cause I think that Rob, I feel like that he was almost in tears in Survivor All-Stars at the point where Amber was like swapped to the other tribe and he like was like drawing her name on his arm. But he seemed to take it pretty well this time out.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure they had to have discussed it before going out and probably felt like they were going to get targeted right away. Yeah. So they probably talked about it a lot.
Yeah. I feel like Adam is in the mix. I mean, Jeremy, he went off in Second Chances like very early on and like was like getting emotional when he had to walk away from the group and be emotional. So there are criers out there. We just haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, winners cry too, or rather, criers can be winners too.
Yes, yes. Okay, so that'll be an interesting side bet of who's got the first tiers of Survivor's Winners at War. But let's talk about what's going on here. And of course, Ethan got voted out. Do you have any stories about watching Ethan the first time through?
No stories other than just like the rest of America loved him. That was an extremely sad vote out. He was one of the old schoolers that I was really, really rooting for. And I'm excited to talk about the strategy because I think I've done a 180 from how I felt on Wednesday. I think if we would have done the podcast the live right after or the very next day, I would have been like, that was such a stupid move on the people who voted him out. I've done a 180,
okay.
So I don't think it's a horrible move. So I'm excited to talk about
it. Great. Let's talk that through. So, so you felt like on Wednesday night, bad move. You've come around. What did you see now that has made you change your thinking?
Okay. So I guess I'll explain why I thought it was a bad move. And I think it was just like a lot of people were saying online, if you're trying to weaken Boston Rob, why not vote out Boston Rob? And I could understand, I was sort of like, it's a process of elimination, right? Because it had to be one of the three old schoolers. So it's either going to be Parvati. That would have been not a great idea because that was Adam's original plan. Then I sort of flip-flop on that. I was like, maybe that would make it a good idea because then like you just out Adam afterwards as being like, hey man, we know you told the plan, but then you don't have Adam mad at you. Okay. Then you have Ethan, and I think the benefit of doing Ethan was Ethan really connected to many of the new schoolers besides Adam?
I don't know. We saw him in the conversation with Ben, at least when we saw Danny's talking about like the conversation that she had with Rob. So at least that there was a line of communication between Ben and Ethan. But I agree that it seemed like that Ethan was much more hanging out with Rob and Parvati.
Yeah. So I guess I skipped the why it's a bad idea and just went to why it's a good idea because I have changed my mind. But I'm guessing that that's why they did that. And by process of elimination, that makes me wonder if they wanted to work with Boston, Rob, and Parvati more than Ethan. Like maybe Michelle is working with Parvati. Maybe Jeremy wants to keep Boston, Rob as a meat shield. And maybe Ethan wasn't like offering them very much in terms of shielding and or strategic input. Yeah, so I don't think it's a horrible idea. I think you don't go with Adam's original plan, right? Because it's sort of like Adam like needs to realize that what he did was not great and not cool with his alliance.
Yeah. Okay. So, so many different ways that we can go off of that. I guess let's go with the weakening Boston Rob of it all, because I know in terms of like after we watched the episode on Wednesday night, there's a lot of talking about, well, why not just take out Boston Rob? I know I must have said it myself during Survivor Know-It-Alls, but I actually think that the players are being pretty smart about this, where Amber is gone. They've taken out another one of Rob's lieutenants in Ethan. And Boston Rob, I think they're looking at him as sort of like a human immunity idol, in that there will be a point they're down in the numbers. They're going to swap. They're going to merge. And guess who's going to go home when that happens? Not one of them. That there's going to be a point they're going to be basically, they're going to get through a round, because unless the other tribe is already like galaxy brain thinking this of like, hey, We'll always be able to get rid of Boston Rob. Now let's vote out Jeremy. Now let's vote out Denise, because we'll be able to vote out Boston Rob later. That, don't you think that they're looking at it like, okay, well, no matter what happens next, they'll vote out Boston Rob and not one of us?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was thinking too. The danger with that approach is, how many times do you say, okay, next time, okay, next time, okay, next time, until that person is like suddenly at the end? Although we're very far from that now, I realize, but I think that must be what they're doing, right? They are keeping the obvious targets in because they are always going to be a target and always going to be a vote. And I ended up liking the move as well, because now Boston Rob and Parvati are not really going to be able to work with Adam anymore. So Adam's plan of like, oh, maybe if I tell people, I'll be able to work with them down the road. That was his plan, right? That's not going to be possible now, because Rob and Parvati voted for Adam. Adam got caught telling the plan about Rob. So it's sort of like they left two good people in the game, in Rob and Parvati, that don't really have anywhere else to go.
Right.
Whereas maybe if they had left Ethan, Adam would have gotten with Ethan.
Yeah. So they cut off some options there from Adam. And then also he sort of got frozen out from this vote. But I don't think we've given enough credit to Jeremy and to Michelle. And really, in terms of like what I saw in the episode when I went back and watched it, that it seems like that Michelle is really the one. I think she brings up Ethan's name first. We see her talking with Jeremy. We see her talking with Denise. And it seems like that Michelle is really the person who is the like putting this whole thing together after her initial conversation with Jeremy. And look at them, Gabby, that they are the two people who got blindsided on day two. They're the only people that were left in the tribe that didn't vote for Natalie. And now they have all the power.
Yeah, that is like the classic power shift in Survivor, right? And why I think you can't ever really lose hope when you are on the bottom, because in just a matter of two votes, suddenly they were the ones calling the shots.
It's 6 days later.
Yeah, that is so cool. And it's really good Survivor play. And I loved that whole sequence. And I took notes on this whole sequence because I thought it was just extremely good Survivor play. And I'm talking about that whole sequence where you see Adam tell Boston Rob.
Yes.
Boston Rob confront Jeremy and Michelle. And then Jeremy and Michelle talk about their plan. And what I like in this too is Survivor is like a parfait.
Parfait.
It has layers.
Layers.
It has layers. So I've heard people say before that it's like whatever the last plan is kind of what goes into action. And I think Stevens described it as like it's a wheel and it stops somewhere, and the last plan before you get put on shutdown and go to tribal, that's the plan that happens. I think that sounds too random. And so I think of it as a parfait having layers, because it's like you need to know the previous plan before you can layer on top of that one. So it's like, okay, well, this is what Adam thinks is happening. Now I'm Boston Rob. I'm going to layer on top of that. Let's actually do this. Now I'm Jeremy and Michelle. Now, okay, that's what Boss and Rob thinks is happening. Let's layer on top of that and actually do this other thing.
Yeah.
And it was just like that sequence was so exhilarating to me. And it was the most, I think the most indicative or the most, it felt the most like how it actually feels to play Survivor to me. Like there is that many, there are that many layers. There are that many back and forths. And sometimes you don't get to see it on the show.
Yeah.
And I feel like the edit, the show really captured like how quickly plans can change in that layered kind of way.
Gabby, so building off of that, tell me if you think that this is a good idea. Because I think about this, about if I was ever on the island, I think that, you know, on the first day, you know, the tribal council was yesterday. I want to get, you know, I want everybody to be mad at me the first day after tribal council. Because then they went by, they're like, okay, we got to vote out Rob. We can't stand this guy. He's too annoying. Vote. This is the plan, everybody. Vote. I want to be the first plan every time. Because if I'm the first right. plan, it'll change my tribal council.
Right. But sometimes maybe it circles back. It comes back around. It's like, okay, let's just do this thing. But no, you're right. And actually, that was another note that I had about the episode, which was that I was surprised. And I wonder if this had to do with the chaos that Adam was bringing up Parvati's name so early. Before they even went to try or lost immunity. And I know that obviously that happens. People are always strategizing on Survivor, but I feel like you hear, you know, one of the rules, I feel like this season is all about like, as winners, we know that blank, blank, blank. But I feel like one of the things I would have expected was like, don't bring up someone's name too early mm-hmm. or don't start strategizing too early because it will rarely land on that. And that is a very, that's a personal lesson that I learned because I feel like that's how I got voted out. I started my plan, my backstabbing plan way too early and it gave people like 3 days to come up with a counter plan.
Mm-hmm.
So I wondered if that worked against Adam.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're talking about a lot of interesting things here. Let's bring in some of the questions from the voicemailers. And we got a lot of different versions of this type of question. And let's bring this one in from the great Matt Forsyth, who has a question about the types of targets of the people that are going home so far this season.
Hey, what's up, Rob and Gabby? Matthew Forsyth here. And I wanted to get your all's takes on the first four boots of the game. So obviously, Natalie, Amber, Danny, and Ethan are all fantastic players, but they're certainly not as big of targets as people like Sandra or Tony or Boston Rob or Parvati. And so I'm curious if you all think that this is a shift in strategy where people are going after kind of the lesser targets or if it's just been a random occurrence for the first four boots. Thanks.
Okay. Gabby, I think this stuff is really, really interesting to talk about because I've been talking about for the last couple of years on the podcast that, hey, you got to go after the goats in these types of seasons because they're just going to basically that they're going to be the people that are like I'm talking about with the, you know, the people that are always the obvious target, but they never go home because then it's too obvious and people change the plan and you think that the person who is going to be a huge goat is going home and they always end up staying. But in this season, there are no goats. There are no people that you say, well, they're drawing dead. They can't get to the end because everybody here has already gotten to the end and won in a season. And nobody has done anything so despicable that they have been disqualified by the people that are going to be in the final three. So do you think that the players have now shifted that to, okay, let's vote out the people that are in the middle?
That was an awesome question from Matt, and I have heard you talk a lot about that. And in general, I agree with your usual strategy that you usually preach about not letting the goats get too far. And you're right; there are no goats on this season yet. I'm sure they will make themselves later, just in the context of this season, right? Like somebody who didn't play as hard as somebody else later.
Or an Edge of Extinction returnee that might come back. They could be considered a goat in this season. That's possible.
Right. But you're right that on day six, that isn't really clear who that's going to be yet. So I wonder if maybe it's the medium players that are being targeted, or I wonder if it almost in a way emulates like this is going to sound like the craziest, maybe I shouldn't say this, like almost a newbie season. Of course, that's impossible because there's so many pre-existing relationships. But in the sense of like, it seems like it's just like pure alliances. Whereas maybe on something like Survivor Second Chances, like on other all-star returnee seasons, it's people are trying to like overplay or maybe prove something. So it's like on Second Chances, we didn't really get alliances. We had the swingy voting blocks. So maybe it's like, I guess newbie season was the wrong comparison, but it's like a very alliance-based game so far, it seems like. So it's just like, if you're on the outs, you're on the outs. And I feel like we've seen really clear rationales for why each person was taken out. And it usually revolved around some kind of alliance push and pull. It was less of like, she's already won twice, so we're going to vote for her. It was less like meta stuff. I guess maybe the poker alliance stuff was meta. Mm-hmm. I don't know. This season is so meta. Yeah. It like kind of hurts my brain.
But I think you're bringing up some good points because that I feel like even in Second Chances, I feel like that there were a lot of votes that happened that were sort of like personality based. Okay, this person, I can't stand living with this person. Okay, this person has to go, as opposed to this has been almost every single vote. Okay, this person is aligned with this person. This person, we have to get rid of this person because they're aligned with that person. That there hasn't been one vote yet that's like, you know, we can't stand living with this person.
Yeah, and I think it's just because the winners are too smart. They know that if you start voting along those lines of just like, this person's pissing me off, I just don't like their personality, it becomes too random of a game. And Yule talked about this, where Yule wanted to align with somebody who plays rationally, because he feels if it's someone who you can't predict, it's really hard to work with them. And I can't agree with him more. And so I think the winners are too smart, where they know we can't start doing this like wild voting block thing, because none of us are going to be able to hang on. None of the decisions will be being made in any way that makes sense. And I could be next on the chopping block. Whereas if you maintain a sense of like, this is how we're playing with alliances. Yes, we're going to make big moves when appropriate, but like, we are all playing good games of Survivor. And I love it as a fan because they're giving us a great season. I love Second Chances as well, but it definitely was that more like frantic, seemingly random style of gameplay at times.
Yeah. And I think that Second Chances also as a season, it was a lot of like, hey, these are big personalities and let's bring them back for, you know, another timeout and see what happens. And you had people like Abby and Cass and Keith Nail and people that were, you know, more, you know, character. I mean, I don't want to say Cass is just a character, but you know what I mean? It's not just like people that have won the game and, you know, have demonstrated that they can go 39 days in the game, every single one of them. So let's talk a little bit about Adam, because I think that Adam has really been the straw that stirs the drink here on this Sele tribe through so much of the early going of the season. And let me bring in a voicemail question from Chase. And Chase says that Adam's gameplay should not surprise us because he had a similar style of gameplay back in Millennials versus Gen X.
Hey, Robin, Gabby. Lots of the fans seem to think that Adam is going to be on the outs after he overplayed his hand a bit in the most recent tribal council, and the person that he wanted to go home ended up not going home. But Adam found himself in a very similar situation at the merge in his season, where he was overplaying. He told Taylor about this advantage in the game and ended up like blowing up in his face. And Adam was on everyone's mind. But what happened is that like it seemed like Adam ended up going under the radar instead of being this target. So my question for you all is that, do you think that Adam is finding himself in the exact same position that he found himself in Millennials versus Gen X? And is this actually going to end up benefiting his game? Or is this finally going to blow up in his face and we're going to see him go home? Love to hear your thoughts.
I was so confused the first time I listened to that voicemail today when he said, my question for Yule is, wait, Yule's not on the feedback show. Like, oh, you all. Okay.
You so all Adam,
yes, Adam got himself into trouble in the merge of millennials versus Gen X. I'd gone back and I had looked at this actually Josh Wigler was on the Know It Alls that night. I was listening to a little bit of that. We were talking about how, you know, Hannah and Zeke were talking about how, oh, it's so hard being allies with Adam because he's telling people things. And, you know, this is similar to what ends up happening here. Adam was able to turn that situation around. Do you feel like, is Adam going to be able to rebound from this?
Okay, few things. To me, this highlights, the millennials versus Gen X thing highlights my hashtag controversial, perhaps, opinion that that like winners are flawed humans that don't always play perfect games. And sometimes that's the thing that helps them win the game. And so I don't think that that situation is unique to Adam. I don't know. Maybe I'm a little cynical in thinking that, like, you know, winning is probably a large portion luck. And it probably is a large portion also not being the strongest player at any given time. It's great to ramp up at the end. But yeah, mm-hmm. I think that that did help Adam's game at the merge in millennials versus Gen X. What the difference is with this season, I think, is that there is going to be such a tough rubric, a tough criteria, set of criteria at the end for who these winners decide is going to be the ultimate winner, the winner among winners. And I think that, yes, the winner at the end will have made some mistakes. How do I know that? Because every single winner has made mistakes, just as every single Survivor player has made mistakes. But I think the winner whose mistakes were less egregious or less, honestly, annoying mm-hmm. will come out victorious. And I think it would be hard if you were one of the four that was like frustrated or pissed off by Adam trying to play both sides. It might be hard if Adam is sitting at the end to vote for him, especially if your ass got voted out. And then you're kind of like, okay, yeah, you got to the end, but it was only because everyone was annoyed at you and wanted to sit next to you. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen. Adam could totally recover and ingratiate himself again. But my point is, I think on this winter's season, mistakes are going to be more costly than ever because the criteria for winning is going to be so tight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so early too, though. You know, it's just interesting because then these people are going to be on the jury of, you know, the people that are, you know, getting voted out now at this point in time. But there's so much that's going to go on with the Edge of Extinction.
Right. And that's the only reason I bring up like the final three and the jury so early in week three is because of Edge of Extinction. Normally, if it was pre-merge, I'd be like, oh, who cares? Like, get them out of there. It doesn't matter. And the other thing I want to say, the reason this mistake might hurt Adam is worse than the final three criteria of winning. It's the long-term, have people lost their trust in Adam and you want to show yourself to be a loyal ally. And if people are feeling like you're telling all our plans to who we're trying to vote out, that he may not be clued into the very many plans from now on, or people are going to be really hesitant in doing so. Or people may be like only telling him things at the last second, which is not good either.
Okay, so let me bring in another question about Adam and his gameplay from the great Taylor Cotter Bruno. TCB wants to know, Robin Gabby, do you think that Adam is playing a game that maybe made sense where he was playing with all millennials, but doesn't work when he's only one of the few millennials out there? Should he be saying, okay, boomer more? So do you think that that Adam, amongst other young people or younger people, that, okay, I'm going to, you know, share more information. Okay, I made a mistake. Can you forgive me? Do you think that that style of gameplay works better with a younger crowd than it might play with this older group of a lot of players that are, you know, hovering around 40?
hovering on or around 40.
Yeah, well, I think Jeremy's 40. I'm not sure how old Ben is. Rob's like mid 40s.
Yeah, I don't know if it's age based or if it's more experience based. By experience, I don't mean life experience. I mean experience in the game. So that was actually something I noted too, which was just because that was a strategy that worked with Taylor or whoever, doesn't mean it's going to work on Boston Rob. Like, it's Boston Rob. What's Rob going to do when he finds out that information? Just sit idly by and let Parvati get voted out? Whereas, yeah, maybe someone with less experience is like, oh, thanks, man. I'm so glad you told me. Like, they're more paranoid because they've never played Survivor before. So they're like, oh my God, I'm so glad Adam's telling me what's going on. Like, all right, now I really know I can trust Adam. Like, no, you're telling the Godfather. The Godfather is going to feel like, are you kidding me? Which we kind of saw in the confessionals. Mm-hmm. So I feel for Adam. I like what he did in theory, and I understood it. What I appreciate about Adam is he's extremely self-aware. I was screaming at the TV right when his confessional interrupted me and said, people at home are wondering, why are you telling Ethan? And I was like, oh, okay. Was that a good impression?
Yeah, I got what you were going for. Yeah.
And I was like, okay, so he does know that this looks bad from the outside. And he explained himself, which I appreciate. There's always a fine line between a good move and a bad move. And often that line is whether it works or not. And if that had worked, then we would have said like, oh, good job, Adam. He voted out Parvati and he maintained relationships with Rob. But I think many of the audience members might have predicted that that was not how Rob was going to take it. And it wasn't the right move.
So I think that this week was really fascinating to watch Rob and Adam try to come together and work on a vote, because it got me really thinking about, you know, their two styles of play. And I actually think that they are really bad fits to potentially work together. And I think of the way that Adam plays, I feel like is similar to the way that I would approach the game, is that Adam, to me, is a deal maker. He is looking to, you know, make a lot of relationships with people and then find the groups of people where let's create a win-win scenario for you and me. We have these, you know, goals that are, mutually beneficial for us. Let's find the win-win scenario that we can work together on this thing. Where Boston Rob does not approach the game that way. And I believe that Boston Rob approaches the game from the scenario of win-lose. Boston Rob only wants a deal where he wins and you lose. And he's not interested in a deal that is potentially where he wins, he gets something and you also get something. And I think that that Adam coming to Boston Rob with this idea of this, you know, win-win scenario just was never going to be something that was going to be appealing to Rob.
Yes. Yeah, that is such a good point, man. This is why you have this podcast. I hadn't thought about that it's not just like who you want to play with, but who your style aligns with. And I like Adam's style. I think if I were playing, I would play with that style too. I think compromise is great and necessary in Survivor. And I know you talked a lot with everybody you had on the podcast this week about how maybe this is why Rob is such an early game vote out or an end game player, because he isn't really a compromiser and it's like win or lose. And that's what I was wondering when they did have this conversation, was like, because you say win-win, but I'm not really sure what the like win was for Boston Rob. Like, basically, you're just telling
him, we're protecting you. I think that's what Adam was saying. We're keeping you. You're losing your number, but we're keeping you around, and we're going to keep you safe. And I promise you, you will have safety but you are not going to have your ally. And but Rob, that his ideal ally is somebody who doesn't know they're losing and thinks they're winning, like, you know, the people that he worked with in Redemption Island. Hey, we're knocking out all these other players. We're winning. We're getting further. But what they don't know is that they're losing because they're running out of ways to stop Boston Rob. So every time they think that they're moving forward, they think they're winning. They're actually losing. That's the scenario that works for those people because that they're under the impression that it's win-win, but it's really Boston Rob is winning and they're losing.
Right. And you're so right, because that's exactly what Rob tried to do to Michelle and Jeremy, right? Is he's like, hey, what about if we did Adam? Isn't that a win-win for both of us? Yeah. Meanwhile, we know that's not really a win-win for the new schoolers because they're going to lose a number.
Yeah.
But that was like the perfect way to play Survivor, which is like, hey, I'm helping you guys just so you know your ally isn't helpful, isn't trustworthy.
Can you believe what he's doing? Can you believe he's talking behind your back?
Yeah. And then it's like, let me help you by getting him out. Like, let's blindside Adam. I'm helping you. And this is like why it's so fun to watch All Winners and not Redemption Island, because Michelle and Jeremy were too smart for that. And it's just like, oh my gosh, how many times could it just like, how many layers of parfait can we get? I just want to see like the world's tallest parfait in one of these episodes.
I really would like to say parfait here for this season. And for Jeremy and Michelle, they're able to create their win-win in that they kind of create a win-win-win in that they knock Ethan out, who was somebody who wasn't working directly with them. They both have said, you know, that Jeremy wants to keep Rob around. Michelle wants to keep Parvati around. That's like her own personal, like for Jeremy, he has his own personal meat shield where that they're not going to vote out Jeremy. They're going to vote out Boston Rob. And if you're going to vote out Parvati, you know, you're not going to vote out Michelle. You're going to vote out the more famous version of the social threat who is working with everybody in Parvati. So they win there. And then also that they're able to sort of, you know, keep Adam in the game, but also like kind of neuter him in what he's able to do in terms of like talking to everybody and how much he's moving around. They're able to really just keep Adam in a corner.
Yes, honestly, the more we talk about it, the more I'm like, this was a good move for Jeremy and Michelle. And the other people I was thinking of was it is also good because Denise, it's good for Michelle and Jeremy because Denise has now maybe pissed off Adam.
Yeah, I think it was maybe, I don't know how much say Denise had. Do you think that this was a bad move for Denise? Because I think that Adam is going to be like, Denise, why? I'm your Malcolm. Why did you blindside me?
Yeah, I if I were Denise or Ben, I might have said like, well, then let's just keep it Parvati, but then like confront Adam later. So really, I feel like I'm getting more and more convinced that this was a very good move for the movers and shakers that we saw, Michelle and Jeremy. Good episode for them. Ultimately, okay. I know people are mad at them right now. So
yeah, well, that it's unfortunate that they had to target Ethan.
Yeah, good episode for them. Sad loss for all the Ethan fans, which is pretty all much of us, all of America.
All of us.
Yeah.
Okay. This is a question that comes to us from one of the listeners, Drew Bertoldi. How much potential is there that targeting all of Rob's allies will backlash horribly? I feel like the more you weaken Rob, the more desirable he becomes as an ally when the swap or the merge comes. Is it possible that Boston Rob ends up becoming so weakened that people start to look at him as somebody that they can take further and further into the game?
I don't think anybody's going to see Rob that way. I don't think it's like a Sandra thing where on her second time winning, she was kind of like a weaker person that they were like, yeah, we can take her. With Rob, like, he's scary. He's a scary person.
But do you think that there's any sort of sentiment maybe about among the people that are out there? Well, nobody's going to give Rob another $2 million. People will not vote for him to win.
I feel like people would if they're like, oh my God, despite the odds, like, despite him having his wife out here and making him a huge target and blah, blah, blah. I don't know, but I get what the person who wrote in is saying. And that sort of goes back to like a variation on the GOAT thing, where it's like the more you ignore somebody, the further they can get, and maybe oddly the more powerful that makes them.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, look, I'm all for taking Rob out, like, because I'm getting kind of tired of the let's weaken Rob, but I'm gonna take out his wife thing. Like, just take out Rob.
Yeah. I understand why, though. I think it makes it. I think it's interesting to see how far that goes. And if it does backfire on everybody, it would be also hilarious to watch.
It would. Oh, my gosh. If Winners at War was just like Redemption Island Part 2 with much smarter people. Wow. The biggest twist we never saw coming.
Okay. All right. Speaking of Boston Rob, let me ask you this question. This is from Jeff from Texas.
Hi, Rob. Hi, Gabby. This is Jack from Texas calling. Gabby, this question is for you. So in David versus Goliath, you played with Godfather Carl. And in this season, we have Boston Rob being also known as the Rob Father on the Sele tribe. And then on the Dakal tribe, Yule, who was known, somewhat known in Cook Islands way back when, was also known as the Godfather at that time. So my question is, in between Godfather Carl, the Rob Father, and Yule, the former Cook Islands godfather, who do you think is best at playing the godfather role? Anyways, love to hear your thoughts.
Okay, apologies to Jack. My Google Voice transcribed him as Jeff from Texas. This is Jack from Texas. Okay, all right. Godfather Carl, the godfather Rob, the Rob father, and godfather Yule from Cook Islands. Who's the best godfather?
Okay, I feel like I did not even realize that Yule was considered a godfather. And so in a way, would that make him a
Yule
really...
Yule is like a godfather out here.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize. Thanks for calling in, Penner. I forgot about that.
No problem.
I feel like Yule is the most effective because you don't realize he's doing it because he is so nice and so smart and so... rational and level in the way he presents you this idea. And he's like, look, I know you want to do this, but I've got this extremely powerful idol and I just need you to actually do this other thing. Whereas Rob is like a little bit heavy-handed, a little bit. I mean, the episode opened with him tickling Adam's nose with a leaf. Like, I feel like that was meant to
rise and shine. You feel like that was threatening. That was meant. That's like waking up with a horse's head in your bed. Yeah, that you wake up with a leaf tickling your nose.
Yeah. No. Just more
so,
just
so you know, I'm watching you sleep.
He's so like above everyone that he can actually play with you while you're sleeping. That sounded much worse than what he was actually doing. But it's like it's sort of. Like patronizing in a way, right? I mean, maybe they're buddies and he's just joking around, but like that's what it could come across as. So anyway, I got to go with Yule on this one because it's like the best godfather is one that you want to work with and one that you're like, yeah, let me kiss your ring. You're my favorite ever. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. And Godfather Carl, that he wasn't like making any sort of like a, you know, ultimatums where if you crossed him, then you were the next to go, right?
I don't remember if he made ultimatums like that, but Carl fits into the category of one of the more obvious, like not doing it in a very level way, like swinging from a hammock after drinking beer on a reward. Mm-hmm. Basically, like people were coming to him and he was saying, mm-hmm. this is what we're doing. And then at Tribal saying the same thing. So he fits more under like the Boston Rob category where it's like everybody knows that.
Yes.
He's the godfather.
Yeah. But not in like in a menacing way. Not in a threatening way.
Of course.
Way.
I love Carl. Yes. We tease him about that all the time. And he loves it. He changed Cebu. His handles on online to be Godfather Carl. So you're welcome. I gave him that.
Okay. All right. Let's play this question. Since we're talking about Yule, let's talk about one of Yule's alliances on this season. Okay. Here's a question. This is from one of our listeners, Sam.
Hi, Rob and Gabby. This is Sam from Colorado. I've been seeing a lot of people give Sophie a lot of credit for her Nerd Shield strategy, but I've been thinking, didn't Gabby do this first? So first of all, set the Survivor history book straight? And second of all, what advice would you give to Sophie in her position? Love to hear your thoughts.
Okay. All right. So, Gabby, are you actually the person who invented this?
People talk about like having meat shields around. I feel like I have my own nerd shield in Yule. And like, I will never be the smartest person on the tribe as long as I have Yule there, like, you know, talking about physics or whatever.
I love that so much. So I tweeted that when she said that, I screamed because I have a confessional where I say that about Christian. But let me set the history book straight. I do not believe that Sophie Clark took this at all from
no
me.
No plagiarism?
No plagiarism, because mine was from a secret scene. It was not on the actual show.
Oh, okay. So, I know she watches the secret scenes.
I highly doubt Sophie Clark was watching my specific confessional secret scene. Like, it wasn't even a secret scene. It was like Gabby's extra confessionals.
Hold on. Let me see. What's this? I have a clip on my computer called Gabby Nerd Whisperer. Let me see what this is.
So I consider myself the Nerd Whisperer.
I mean, what's that?
Nerd Whisperer. Yeah. But the concept of having someone smarter in front of you, like if you're a smart nerdy player, like me or Sophie, and even if we weren't actually that smart, we wear glasses, so people are going to be like, okay, there's the smart girl. She's the strategist. It's that idea of like hiding behind someone smarter than you, or maybe who's more openly nerdy. So I don't think Sophie took it from me, but that's why I screamed, because it's either that we are great minds think alike, and I would be honored to share any thought with Sophie Clark, because she's one of my favorites, or, you know, my tinfoil hat is like, I think the producers thought that was really funny when I said it. And maybe they were like, oh, this was good. Let's see if Sophie thinks this is funny, but maybe it's a great minds think alike. I would actually prefer that, because, I admire her. And so what was the second part of the question? It was that, what would be my advice to Sophie? And my advice would be, don't try to backstab your nerd shield. Get yourself voted out.
Yeah.
Keep your shield as a shield, because that is the intention of a shield. And this is the thing is, I think I, being on a newbie season and being sort of at the end of the game, very paranoid and looking far to the future, I got very self-conscious, I would say, about my perception in comparison to Christian. And I could sense that Christian was going to get all of the credit for all of the joint decisions that we had made. Sophie, I don't know if she's going to suffer from that same problem, because they're on a season of all winners. So she could sit at the end with Yule and probably make a very convincing case. I mean, if we just look resume-wise right now, she already has half an idol from Kim. That is probably speaking to her social game. So I think my advice would be, write it out, stay with your nerd shield, and find ways at the end of the game to differentiate your game, as opposed to what I did, was get too freaked out that he was taking all my credit and tried to get rid of him way too early.
Yeah. So I was going to ask you, well, how do you untangle that? So it's interesting you say, okay, she should just stay with Yule, go to the end. I do think that she is somebody who would be able to maybe figure that out at the final tribal council, where Sophie is the same person who sat at the end of the game with Coach. And then I think a lot of people felt like, okay, well, if Sophie gets to the end with Coach, then people are going to give Coach all the credit. But actually, they gave Coach all the blame, and Sophie really buried Coach at that final tribal council. And, you know, still to this day, you know, she's very cutting in terms of being able to, if she wants to, being able to take somebody down. So I think that Sophie actually might be well positioned to be able to, you know, really underline those differences in their game.
Yeah, exactly. She is so good at telling stories. I know that's her thing, is what's the story that you're telling? But the other thing is, she doesn't need to take him all the way to the end, maybe not final three. But, you know, if you get close enough, final five, final four, maybe if she is an idol at that point, and he goes out of the game because he doesn't have protection, that's cool. Like, it's like you kind of find a way to get him out of the game without looking like a horrible backstabbing bitch like I was, or you have to outline your differences. I think she'd be able to do either.
Yeah. And I don't think that's how you looked on your season.
Oh, thanks. Thanks. You know, I adore Christian, and I'm so glad that our friendship persevered through that backstabbing.
Yeah. I think that he probably, as much as anybody, understands that's just how the game is played. Do you feel like that's how people perceived you on the show?
No, I was being a little harsh on myself, because yeah. I think sometimes I feel really, I feel guilty about it. And, it's such a close link for me for, like, I tried to do this move to backstab somebody and it directly got me voted out. So there's, like, a pretty clear, you know, like cause and effect, or like correlation between, I did this thing that was hard and felt kind of crappy, and then I had a really bad consequence. So I think it is easy for me to say, like, that was the reason that I got voted out. And I felt bad, because it did go against my nature. I felt bad about it, but I think that these winners will appreciate cutthroat moves, but of course you still have to be worried about how the jury is going to perceive you at the end.
Okay. Well, one of the people that was there, a part of the plan that ultimately took you out of the game, and the person that you voted for to win the game, Nick Wilson, is out there, correct? You were a Nick Wilson vote, right?
Yes, I was a Nick Wilson vote. Wait, is Nick on this season?
Oh, Gabby. Come on. Yeah, did you see him screaming about the shark?
Yeah, what about Nick? Let's talk about him.
Yeah, okay.
I'm just teasing. And Nick has not been complaining about his edit or anything
like
that.
He's been a good sport.
He's been a good sport. Actually, all of them have been, but I just wanted to say as an aside, my new favorite genre of tweets is winners complaining or joking or self-deprecating about their lack of screen time, because it is killing me, because none of them are used to it.
Yeah.
So they're all like, people will like not go to tribal, and then they'll be on Twitter the next day like say, you know, making some self-deprecating tweet about like, oh, I wasn't in the episode. And I'm like, your tribe didn't go to tribal. I know you're so used to the story revolving around you, but like, there's 20 other people. There's 19 other people we have to get to. So it's just, I'm glad they're actually all being good sports about it, but I just can't help but laugh, because like, I think they're genuinely just like not used to this season not being completely about them.
Yeah, only one person can get that winner edit this season.
Yeah.
Can't do it for 20 people. Okay, so what's been your take on what we've seen from Nick so far this season?
Well, truthfully, we haven't seen that much, and I have to think that that's a good thing.
That's good, right?
And yeah, I mean, I texted him after this episode, because he really didn't have any content, and I said, hey, you know what? Better safe than screen time. Like,
yeah.
I would much rather be maybe not that important to the story right now. I don't know if he's going to be important later, but to not be going to tribal is never a bad thing. So I don't know much about his strategy right now, because we haven't seen it, other than he's playing with the one timers. I think that's a good idea. I think he's playing with Wendell. I'm pretty sure they are either like friends outside of the game, or, you know, at least met one time. Am I allowed to say that? Okay.
I'm sure there's probably pictures somewhere, right?
Well, yeah. And people, you know, people go to charity events and stuff like that. I'm not saying like they met up in private in a secret bunker and planned
bunker?
To be aligned.
Yeah.
A bunker. You know what? I wasn't sure what a bunker was.
I don't know much about bunkers.
Yeah, I felt like Ethan. I was like, what is, I thought a bunker was like a bed that you slept in, like in the army, like a bunker, or like the,
yeah,
where you hide when there's a zombie apocalypse. Like, what is a bunker?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think that's sort of the idea. I feel like it's kind of like a hole in the ground that you can sort of hide in for a little bit.
It's like a trench.
Yeah, I think it's trench warfare. This is what Ben explains it also.
I don't know how else to put it, but it's like a circle, and everybody's in their own little bunker, right?
Yeah, I like that Ben explained that Netflix show that he was. It's like the circle, and everybody's in their own bunker. And then you message each other.
Yeah, he's actually doing Netflix advertisement. Yeah, is it a circle or is it a bunker? It's getting a little mixed up there. But anyway, back to Nick. I know he's got people that he wants to work with out there that are in similar boats to him that have only played one time. And I think that that's smart. I was laughing at some of the pregame press because he's a fan. You know, I know he and I talked a lot about like our favorite players and stuff like that. So it was funny in pregame press to see him fawning over, for example, Tyson. Mm-hmm. And then in Tyson's interview, he'd be like, man, Nick is like following me around. I was like, oh God, this is going to be so bad.
Yeah. Would you have been that same way if you were out there with all these players?
I would have been fawning over, maybe not as much like the legends, but more just the people that I feel like I would click with. And that would be like Sophie and Yule, like people that I would probably be friends with outside of the game. I think I would be scared of the real players. They would smash me. I like wouldn't speak to Parvati.
Right.
I wouldn't be able to.
Well, I kind of had that experience with Survivor All-Stars, and I wasn't afraid of anybody in terms of, you know, I probably had like too big of a head and was probably arrogant that I wasn't afraid of anybody, and that might have been part of my problem. But I know I was just super excited to be around all these different Survivor people, and I just wanted to ask them so many questions, and I feel so dumb, but I think they all found it very annoying.
So is a clue to be like not annoying. Would that be your advice to these first time returnees? Is just like don't be a fanboy.
Well, if you have a lot of questions that you want to ask the survivors, instead you should just start a podcast and then you get to ask them all the questions that you want, and then they'll hang up on you eventually. But then they don't have to vote you out on TV.
Yeah, but then 10 years later, you get to like have this be your life.
Yeah,
and
so that's good. That's the right format for asking the survivors questions. That they don't want to like, you know, talk a ton about their season. That would be my advice to the new players. Don't annoy the survivors.
But also, please don't encourage anybody to create any more Survivor
podcasts. Yeah, we don't need that either. That's true.
I think we're good. I think we're maxed out.
We might be good. But so then I have another question for you about Nick from one of our listeners, Alan. Do you think that Nick's experience as a David playing with the or against the Goliaths helps him playing with or against some Goliath-sized egos in Winners at War?
Ooh, that's good. I like the egos thing. I think that's going to be a huge benefit for the one-time players, as opposed to the like legendary people that have been out there four times. Some of them may be humble. I'm trying to think of who all the like multiple timers are, but I mean, some of the egos, I think back to like episode one when Rob and Parvati we're like, we're playing for 10 people out here because like everyone else is dumb, or they didn't say that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, that's a very dangerous way to think. And I think they were just being funny. And honestly, like they are icons. Who the hell am I to talk? But that's going to be a huge weak spot for a lot of these multi-time returners is an ego.
Yeah.
So yeah, if Nick can capitalize on that, if the newbies can capitalize on like the big dogs taking each other out, then so be it. Then that's a great plan. That's sort of like the Goliaths taking each other out because they all like want to be top dog.
Mm-hmm. So Gabby, my question for you here is that do you think the phrase as a David appears at any point, whether it's Nick in confessional, Nick at tribal council, Jeff asking a question to Nick at tribal council, do we hear the phrase as a David at all during this season?
No, because it's not David versus okay. Goliath. What you're going to hear to death is as a winner. I think last episode.
I love the as a. It's a start a sentence because that Sarah dropped one in the last episode.
As a cop.
Yeah.
I heard that too. And I was like, that is not how I talk in my normal life. I don't walk around. But on Survivor, you do. As on Survivor, I'm like, this is a normal way to explain something. As a technical writer, I have to communicate with people. Yeah. And I'm like, nobody talks like that.
As a mom, as a Marine, as a winner, as a returning player.
Yeah. No, Jeff said something funny last episode that was like, as a winner, mm-hmm. on a tribe of all winners. And I was like, yeah, yes, we got it. That's it's in the name of the season.
This is part of the Survivor drinking game. Anytime anybody opens a sentence with as a blank, that's a drink.
Yeah, good. I like it. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. All right. So we'll be
as
on
a lookout. As a podcaster, that's how, if you ever went back on.
Yeah. Gabby, as a podcast guest, do you think that I had this thought today about how that that Nick and Mike White were in the finals of the season with Angelina in the final three, and that, you know, there were votes for Mike and there were votes for Nick, and so maybe like in an alternate universe, there's a scenario where Mike White is one of the winners at war. Do you think that he would come on and do a post-game retrospective with me if he was one of the winners at war?
I think he would be dying to. I think you would have to answer all of his questions with, as a fan of the Emoji Movie.
As a fan.
As a huge fan of the Emoji Movie. Yeah. Oh, Mike on the winner season would be so great. He would never do it though.
Do you think he'll ever play again? I know I got knocked for not being a fan. I've become the biggest Mike White fan.
Oh yeah, you gotta be, man. I
hope he plays again.
Of course. I hope he does too. He was honestly watching it afterwards. Like I became a bigger fan of him because he was so damn funny, especially in the episodes after I got voted out. I feel like he just like hammed it up times a million with his wine glass, like iconic gif-able AF. I don't know if Mike would ever play again, cause I feel like he wanted to get like the full Survivor experience, and man, getting to be the runner up and making all 39 days, like you pretty much can't get any closer than that.
Okay. I noticed you went gif, not gif.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, I'm sorry.
Are you big on that? I know Tyson is a big GIF guy. Also,
I am big on it. As a former linguistics student, I feel like it makes more sense for it to be like a soft G because it's got like an I after it. But then I was pointed out that like the word gift with a T at the end is with a hard G.
Oh, that's true.
And that ruined my entire hypothesis. So I just like the way it sounds better. But did you see that GIF, the peanut butter?
Yes, that's what we talked about on News AF.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's how we got started talking about that. But people are very dug in on this. Do you think they should do a season of Survivor of people that pronounce GIF and people that pronounce GIF?
Yeah, at this point, give us the divisions however they're going to come. Yeah.
As a person who pronounces GIF...
Yeah, they're going to be like during casting, because during my casting, I only realized after the fact, but they asked questions like, so do you ever feel like you're underestimated, or like, do you ever feel like an outsider? And after I found out the theme, I was like, oh, that's why. So during casting, would they just be like, so, you know, those little animated loops, like, how do you pronounce that?
Yeah. What would you call this? Like, that's a funny video. Yeah. But what do you think it's called? Okay. All right. So we were talking about Nick not being in a ton of the episodes, but you know that there is a lot of footage of Nick and his tribe over on the secret scenes, a lot of about Dekal life at the secret scenes. And I have an interesting question for you that I haven't heard brought up, kind of a conspiracy theory. Here's Evan from Michigan, who has a thought about the secret scenes.
Hi, Robin, Gabby. This is Evan calling from Michigan. I have a question that's a little inside baseball, but it's about these secret scenes. It seems like there's a trend over the past few seasons where the characters that they focus on in the secret scenes are people that don't have an impact on the end game. Is there some sort of like secret spoiler kind of going on with people that they focus on in secret scenes where they tend to go out a little earlier in the game? Most recent example is obviously Ethan, who had some great secret scenes, and boom, he's out next. So, I don't know. It's just a thought. I want to get your take on it. Thanks so much.
Gabby, do you think, is there any possibility that we see people highlighted in secret scenes because they are going out of the game sooner?
No. I totally get why someone would think that. I think what it is interesting stuff that doesn't have an impact on the game is what's highlighted in secret scenes. So that's where you're seeing the correlation between, oh, they're not having an impact on the game right now, or maybe, you know, but the thing is, Ethan is such a well-known Survivor player and has such an amazing story of surviving cancer, and he speaks so clearly on it. That's the thing. Producers love any story that where the person is narrating it beautifully, is telling their story clearly, has a clear viewpoint. Also, all of those things I just said, those are tips for casting. You have to have a clear viewpoint. And so I think, you know, luckily they got that content with Ethan before he left. I wouldn't have been surprised if he left later, if we would have gotten that content anyway. Or if he had left even earlier, we would have gotten that some version of that content on Edge of Extinction. It's just if you have a good story or if you are funny or, you know, it's like camp life stuff. So I would remove that tin foil hat.
Yeah, I don't think that's the case. Here's what I think goes on, that they make the episode. The episode probably ends up being like 55 minutes. And then they say, okay, what can we cut out of the episode? What are the things that, you know, aren't going to make the episode? And those are the secret scenes. And there was a lot of fun ones this week. Most of them were about the Dekal tribe, that we got to see them braid Tyson's hair. We got to see them go on like a long hike. We got to see a game that Wendell made at the camp. It was just stuff that had nothing to do with the episode, but you know, it's all cut together. And that's I just think that and I think that the best evidence of this is the scene where they catch the shark. There's like a minute. It's like a minute longer on the secret scenes of the stuff that they cut out of it, about how good the shark was. It just didn't make the episode.
Yeah, oh, I'm so glad you said that, because I watched that as well, and I thought the same thing. It's like edited the exact same.
Except, and Nick had a confessional.
Yeah, Nick did. There's like a bunch of stuff in the middle about, like, we put spices on on the shark. And I think on my season, I remember, like, when they did the Brochachos thing, like, that scene was in the episode, and then the secret scene was basically that extended, where it was like they were doing even more pull-ups or whatever. So it is like it was already edited, maybe, and then they cut it out. So, maybe one day Nick will get a confessional that's more than a 2-second scream.
You can see him on a secret scene. You can see him in the secret scene.
See him talking about shark steak. It's also not very exciting. No offense, buddy.
Okay, Gabby, this is a question from one of our listeners. Bodie says, in episode 1, Wendell tried to call Sandra Queen to her face, and she said not to do that. Do you remember this when this happened in the first episode?
I do.
Yes. She told Wendell, don't call me Queen. Here's that first scene.
How you doing, Queen?
Don't do that.
Looking good.
No, don't call me Queen. It'll put a target on my back.
Lo siento. We all remember that from episode 1. But Brody says, however, during the challenge in the most recent episode, Wendell called her by her royal title again. Does the queen stay queen? What is Wendell trying to do here?
Sandra, take a spot on sit-up bench.
Yes, queen. Yes, queen.
Everybody else give me this.
Oh my gosh, your listeners are so sharp. Like, this is so fun because I feel like such a loser when I notice those things. I'm not calling your listeners losers, but I'm glad to know I'm in good company because I noticed that too.
Yeah. She said, okay, please, Wendell, whatever you do, just don't call me queen. And then he does it in front of everybody.
Yeah, but was it in front of, maybe she didn't hear it. Maybe it's like his strategy that he's like, I'm still going to call her queen. But it just in front of, she's on the sit out bench, but I'm like, yes, queen.
Yes, queen, queen. There's the queen, Queen Sandra, 2-time winner right there. The queen. Yay.
I feel like it's just, it's like a respectful title at this point. But yeah, that's funny.
So you do you think that Wendell was trying to throw her under the bus or no?
Not throw her under the bus, but I do think like it's clever.
Okay. Okay. All right, let's take another question. This is one. This is from Jillian from Orlando. Wants to know if you experienced anything like something that happened in this week's show.
Hi, Rob and Gabby. So I have a question. In this episode, we saw that after the tribe lost the immunity challenge, they were sitting around in a stalemate, just kind of staring at each other. So I wanted to ask you, as someone who's played in Modern Survivor, but on a season of all new people, was it anything like that? If your tribe lost immunity and they would come back, was it sort of a stalemate and the TV show just didn't really show it? Or was it way different than what we're seeing here? Just curious. Also, Gabby, I love you and you are my inspiration in Survivor.
Oh.
Thanks.
Oh my God, that was so nice. Thanks, Jillian. Okay. From Orlando. So funny. I feel like a broken record by saying, like, I love RHAP listeners because we think the exact same things. This was in my notes. I literally wrote standoff. They made it seem like that is a winners only thing, but that happened in my season. And I would assume it happens all the time. So yes, it did happen to us. I remember vividly the first immunity challenge that the Davids lost that wasn't the one where Pat got medevaced. So the one where we actually had to vote somebody out. It was exactly like that. We were like sitting around. Nobody was talking. I remember like laying in the shelter, just like making eye contact with people. And then I think it was like Elizabeth was the first one to be like, I'm going to the beach. And then it was like, but actually I didn't even get up at that point because it was sort of like I was scared to. So this is what I wanted to say about that. I feel like anything the winners do this season is just going to be edited as winner.
As a winner.
As winners, we know the game and we know that if you get up and strategize first, that's bad. But if it was like the opposite and if they had come back and scrambled right away, it would have been like, as winners, we know not to waste time and to immediately start strategizing. Like, it's just going to be whatever they do is going to be like, as winners, we do this.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think I think somebody just has to start. You might as well just get up and not waste time. There's only so much time before sundown. And you, as many people know, like you literally don't get to talk at a certain point when it's called like, okay, we're going to tribal and you are not allowed to talk anymore. So it is precious minutes. And it is this like kind of crazy couple of hours because you are watching the sun move and you know that when the sun sets, that's basically when you can't talk anymore. Which is also, I assume, the same reason why all the fire tokens are like, you have to pay for it by sundown. Cause that's
right.
That's like the marker of when you go to tribal and all that kind of stuff. So I'm like, why sit around and do a standoff? I think it's just tension. And I liked Rob's explanation where he was saying everybody's thinking in their head, everyone's going over their game plan. But I was kind of like, just get up. Like somebody's got to start. Nobody's going to be, it's not like on a newbie season where you can say, oh man, that guy's way too strategic. He's like, he's strategizing before tribal? Like, what an outrage.
Yeah.
You've got to strategize.
Yeah, I think that the Elizabeths and was it Jeremy that I think the right move is be the first person to get up, because it's not like the whole rest of the group is going to say, should we just vote out Rob? He got up. Is that the move? Although maybe that's what happened to me in Survivor All-Stars. Like, I wasn't there. they didn't show that on the show. But I kind of feel like that then, and then you could like have plausible deniability. Like if somebody follows you, like I had to go to the bathroom. I don't know why he followed me.
Yeah. I think more people should just get up and start talking. Everyone knows it's going to happen, so you're only postponing the inevitable.
Yeah, Gabby, and then you know if somebody gets up and follows you, you're like, okay, well, at least, you know, if nobody gets up and follows you, they're like, oh, I got to scramble. Nobody followed me.
Right. Well, I think that's what happened to Elizabeth on our season. She got up and nobody followed her. And then it was like, she called me over. She was like, Gabby, do you want to go to the beach? And I was like, well, now if I say yes, I feel like that's going to look really bad. So maybe that's the fear, is like, you don't want to call someone up. Maybe Jeremy doesn't want to get up and say, hey, Ben, come with me.
Ben just followed him.
Which is great. That was good. But also, I don't really see the harm. People kind of know where the lines are drawn. I don't think it would be bad if Parvati, Ethan, and Rob were like, hey, you guys want to go chat? Like, that's going to happen.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the Edge of Extinction. Gabby, have you weighed in on, are you a never edger, or are you with somebody that you tolerated here?
I think you're gonna have to rethink that
you don't like that. That's not good. That's not.
I don't like that at all.
As a never edger.
No, I think we need to not use that term. But no, I am not a fan of the Edge of Extinction. But I do think it was made better with the fire tokens. Maybe that's a hot take, because now there's like a point to the edge. Like now there's communication between the edge and the game. So it's sort of like, okay, you're still in the game. What I didn't like about the edge the first time was it was like, I know they were all like, they were social dynamics you didn't understand, but like they were sitting around like not doing that much, right? Like the occasional clue came in, the occasional advantage, but the fire tokens is like, okay, now you're thinking about who you're setting the fire token to when you get voted out. And maybe that's who you're going to request a fire token from later. Or should I request it from someone else or whatever? The reason I don't want the edge is because I think this season had such a potential for that gut dropping, like stomach lurching feeling of seeing your favorite get voted out. Like when we saw Ethan get voted out, that the blow was softened a little bit by being like, oh, well, he'll be on the edge next week. Still, it's like that meme that's like, hurts just a little bit with the tiny smile. It still hurts, but it's like if the purpose of Survivor is to be this coliseum in which we're like taking each other out and your torch is being snuffed. And in this game, fire represents your life. When your fire is gone, so are you. Well, not really, because you get to go live on this magical island. But I mean, the fire tokens are cool. Should we talk about fire tokens?
Sure. Natalie, that she has all of the fire tokens. She has all three fire tokens that she could have gotten while she's on the edge.
I would have three fire tokens. So I'm actually a billionaire on extinction.
At the top 1%, I'm telling you.
Gabby, are you surprised that we have not seen more fire tokens introduced into the game? Natalie has three. There are only 17 other fire tokens that are out there. I mean, eventually, I mean, is Natalie going to have all the fire tokens?
Yeah, I'm wondering how the circulation is going to work. And so, like, if Natalie bought an advantage now and she paid three tokens, would those three tokens go back into circulation in the main game? And then are they just going to be like hidden around camp kind of like an idol, or that's what I'm curious about.
I don't
know.
I mean, is it sort of like, you know, putting money on the free parking spot where then if she spends them, then are they up for grabs to somebody that wins an immunity challenge, or maybe at the merge that the winner of individual immunity gets a fire token? But I feel like that there has to be ways in which more fire tokens are going to get introduced into the game, because they're going to be all spent.
Yeah, right. They're getting spent. I don't know. There's like a back and forth. It's a survivor economy. There's that back and forth. I want to talk about the fire token strategy.
Yes, let's talk about it.
How Natalie has been selecting her targets, for each token. And they've made sense so far. They've been successful, but, great. 'Cause she sent one to Sandra, I think. Then later I saw on Twitter that she said she felt like Sandra was going to be in danger and Sandra was likely to accept the offer. So that was a good move. Then she gave one to Jeremy, which made sense because she knows he has two. So maybe if you have two, you're more willing to spend one.
Sure.
Because he still gets to hang on to a token. Then for the last one, she targeted Sarah. And I understood that was sort of like, she's a cop and she's willing to...
As a cop, it's easy for me to go on missions.
Yeah, and as a person who had played the vote steal before, that she was going to do that again. Would it make sense to give it to someone who you know has two fire tokens because they are going to be more willing to spend one? And so, for example, I was thinking, this is kind of crazy, wild, send it to Boston Rob.
Yes.
Because you know he has two. You figure Amber sent him hers. And then maybe Rob thinks, oh, this is from Amber, so I'm gonna say yes. And like, does Natalie really care if Rob has an advantage in the game? I feel like if you're on the edge, that this is what I want to ask you. If you're on the edge, are you caring about how well people in the game are doing? Maybe if it's your close ally. But like, does she care? Is she not going to give Rob anything because Rob voted her out? Or is she kind of like, I don't care, I just want to get my paycheck?
Yeah, I don't know. And also, what is her relationship like with Amber? If her and Amber have really bonded, then it might make more sense to send things to Rob that then if she does get back into the game and Rob, for whatever reason, is still there. Like, you would think that when you, if you are able to get back into the game because of the fire tokens, the people that you sent things to will probably want to work with you, right? I mean, you would know necessarily, like, let's say Natalie just runs the table. She wins she finds every advantage. She sends them all in. She comes back into the game knowing where all the advantages are. I would think that she would have a lot of friends. Does she potentially have too much information? Do people want to get rid of her? Because boy, nobody knows about my advantage, but now Natalie's here.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I was going to say, is I feel like coming back from the edge, you're going to have the biggest target on your back. I don't know that I would be like, I would be grateful for someone for sending it if I was someone like Jeremy. But if I was somebody that wasn't aligned with Natalie and I got an advantage from Natalie, I'm kind of like, I want to get Natalie out of the game because I don't want her to steal my thunder. So let alone like spread the information. But you know, if I get to the end of the game and I'm like, I made this epic blindside because I idled so-and-so out of the game, I don't want Natalie to be like, oh yeah, actually I'm the only reason that you had that idol, and kind of like steal your credit.
Right. That she could say that, yeah, I found it, I sent it to you, all you had to do was accept my token.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know.
I'm an extinction billionaire. I buy and sell people like you for breakfast.
Yeah.
I have some other fire token strategy questions for you. Butthurt Rob on Twitter. I'm not sure if that's me. I'm not sure if that's Boston Rob. Butthurt Rob says, do you think that we will be seeing two or more players combine their fire tokens this season? Or do you think that people will be too hesitant on giving them up? Also, will having too many fire tokens be a factor in a player getting voted out this season, because they do have to bequeath them to somebody else? So just to talk about that first part, we haven't seen anybody even like talking about the idea of pooling fire tokens together for any of the tribe advantages, like a tarp. I don't think it's rained once. I think that maybe the people would consider that if they had some bad weather like you guys did. But it seems like that nobody's even talking about that idea.
Yeah, we haven't seen them talk about it. I don't know. I feel like they probably did, and it just wasn't interesting enough to keep.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like how on my season, we had hours and hours of negotiation about what we should give up and not give up to get extra rice.
Mm-hmm.
It was much more than you saw on TV. So it's like, it's boring. They're not going to show the tribe saying, okay, you know, if I had to guess, I would guess that they did maybe on day one, they would have said, okay, maybe we'll do a random draw and let's buy rice. Mm-hmm. Rice for the tribe.
Yeah.
It's probably just, yeah, maybe they didn't. If they didn't, then they're all smart, because I would never pool my chip for a like tribe benefit, you know, like maybe at later in the game you would pool with people. I mean, that's probably what's going to happen, right? Like I'm assuming things are going to get more expensive. I don't know. Maybe that's a bad assumption.
Yeah.
I noticed, I was looking actually, because I looked on Natalie's sheet.
Yes.
And it was sort of like, it was already written up, right? Where it's like, you can exchange this for, you have to sell it to somebody for one fire token. It wasn't like she couldn't choose the amount. So I'm wondering if it's always going to be one, or maybe the price will change. But if it does become more expensive in the future, it has to get more expensive, because even on the menu, it says like advantage in the game, 5 tokens, like peanut butter, 3 tokens. So there's already this idea of like, it's not like it's a 1-for-1 exchange. It is like certain things are more valuable.
Right.
So later in the game, it would be cool if somebody got sent an advantage and it says, you need to exchange this for 4 fire tokens, and I only have 2. So now I'm forced to go to my number one ally and say like, hey, will you loan me 2 fire tokens? Or maybe it's not a loan. Maybe it's we both have to do this, and I'll use the idol on either one of us.
Yeah. Well, that's wild that Natalie has been working so hard on the Edge of Extinction, and somebody could just come in and then end up finding one thing and have more fire tokens than her.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's sort of like the clues might get harder as time goes on.
Maybe.
But wouldn't it be funny if Natalie was like saving all of these and everyone on Twitter was like, yes, queen, like she's getting all the advantages. And then next episode, she just like bought a jar of peanut butter.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's like, oh, thank God. Yeah. Finally, I was saving up for this.
Would you think she would buy the GIF or the GIF?
I think she would buy the GIF.
Yeah.
The GIF. It's got to be the GIF.
We have to see which one she is. I do think it would be interesting, though, like at the merge, if there was like hidden immunity idol, 3 fire tokens. And then if there was like a group that was in the minority, could they pull their fire tokens? Okay, we need the idol tonight. And then use their fire tokens on something like that. I do think that that's interesting. And then like, would the majority say like, okay, well, should we put our tokens together so we should have the idol? At least we know where it is. I do think it makes for a lot of interesting conversations.
Oh, that's cool. So in your idea, is it like a visible thing that everybody can see?
Is it a vending machine?
In the middle,
yeah.
It's in the middle of the merge thing, like 3 tokens. Yeah, it's like you need a giant claw to come down and grab it.
Claw machine. Yeah.
That's cool. I didn't even think about the fact that there could just be advantages in the game that cost something that weren't being sent from the edge. It was sort of like bank money, like house.
Yeah.
House offering, I guess.
Yeah. We just don't know enough about how it's going to work to be able to have any sort of insight into it. But I guess we'll find out. We'll all be learning this stuff together. Let me play you a question. So the Sele tribe has been bequeathed all of the fire tokens. We saw Jeremy get one. We saw Rob get one. Then we saw Denise get one. And we saw Parvati get one. So all of the tokens have been pooling up there at the Sele tribe. Let me play you this question. This is from Megan from Brisbane, who has a question about what that might mean moving forward.
Hey, Rob and Gabby, it's Megan calling from Brisbane, Australia, and I just have a question about the fire tokens and the role that you think they might play in the post-merge. So far, all of the fire tokens that have been bequeathed have gone to players on the Selly tribe. We've got Jeremy with one, plus the safety without power advantage, Denise, Robin, Parvati, all with two, and, of course, Natalie, who's currently on edge but formerly of the Selly tribe, who has three. So assuming these bequeathed fire tokens come into the game post-merge, do you think that having them stacked so heavily in favour of the original Selly tribe might help to level the post-merge playing field and potentially prevent a pogonging? Love to hear your thoughts.
Okay. So in that scenario, with what we're talking about, that do you think it would make sense where if Selle comes in down in the numbers, that maybe kind of like how the Davids were able to put together all of their advantages that they had found to get the numbers back in their favor against the Goliaths? Could you see a scenario where Selle works together to put all their fire tokens together?
That's a really cool idea that... that the tokens themselves give you a form of social capital the same way an extra number might, or an actual physical object like an immunity idol might. Like, just having more tokens, does it give you that capital? Really cool idea that I hadn't thought about before. In this case, I think that Selle is too fractured to want to work together. And I wonder if it's going to be more of a splintering of when there's a merge, them going to different groups. And then it's kind of like whichever alliance has more fire tokens or who knows, you know, if there's a swap, like what happens if they get split up? You know what? I was going to say what happens if Adam and Denise got split up, but then I forgot that Adam gave back that half idol to Denise.
Yeah. But you're right that these groups, I do think that there is a potential fracture there. And I don't, maybe if this was a new player season and these players didn't know one another, but I could see, you know, let's say like the merge happened tomorrow. I could see, you know, Parvati and Rob working with maybe Kim and Tyson, and then, okay, we'll work with you guys. Let's vote out, you know, Jeremy and Michelle and Denise and Ben. Let's pick off those numbers. And maybe they're like, okay, well, let's, you know, Rob and Parvati are shields for us. And so potentially there could be hope from, you know, switching sides if there is a merge. Do you think that there will be a swap?
Oh, I don't know. It's kind of sick that there hasn't been one yet. Sick in a good way.
Yeah, I love speak. It.
As a millennial, I use sick in a positive way.
Yes, yes.
I love it. I love seeing the tribe dynamics play out. That's what we want to see. This is like Survivor, even though despite all these twists, like it does maintain that kind of pure feeling. What was I going to say? Is there going to be a swap? There has to be, but I'm glad that they are waiting.
Yeah. This is the longest they've waited. I don't know since when. I mean, at least episode wise or vote or number of votes wise. Like, I mean, it's only day like 9 or so. Like, I think they've probably waited till like day 12 in some season in the last 20 seasons. But in terms of 5 votes before we have a swap, I don't think has been done since season 23.
Yeah. Yeah.
South Pacific and Redemption Island. I think they had no swaps.
This is why I don't compete on this week in Survivor history quizzes. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, there's always yeah, been a swap every single season since you know back when the Redemption Island days. So I don't mean the season. I mean since there used to be Redemption Island that we've always had swaps in these seasons. So it's very nice and fun to see it play out a little bit longer. Let me bring in this question. This is from Josh in Philly, who has a question about the Edge of Extinction and the returnees.
What's up, Rob and Gabby? It's Josh from Philly. Gabby, I look at the game logistically just like you do, and I'm starting to wonder if a lot of Twitter is going to be very upset here. We have 4 people voted out at day 9. Is there any chance we're going to have 3 entry points for the Edge of Extinction? I hope for the well-being of Josh Wiggler that we don't. Thanks.
Is it possible, Gabby, could we see 3 people come back this season?
Oh, my God. I'll channel my best Josh Wiggler and saying, no, God, please, no, do not let that be the case. I hope.
As a never edger, we do not want to see three people come back.
Yeah, no, I'm curious how he got to
that. What are the three people that we really like?
I still don't want it. It's not, he got voted out. That's not how Survivor works.
You're a purist.
I am more of a purist, yeah. But and I agree with what you suggested. One chance at the merge, maybe. That would be cool. That would be cool.
I do think that would be
fine. Fun thing.
I think people don't like it when Chris Underwood comes back at the final six, and people don't like it when Ozzy looks like he's going to come back in and have like a clear shot to win the game when he comes back in. But, you know, when Ozzy sent himself to Redemption Island to battle Christine Markoski and then won his way back into the game, if Ozzy would have gone on to win the game, that's fine.
Yeah, I agree. And it's like in that same way. If Natalie is able to get all these advantages
and comes back at the merge.
The merge, that's cool. That's cool. And then you have a cool little arc of like, oh, she was the first one voted out. Now she's going to be on this revenge trail of people who voted her out, and now she's more powerful than them. But like, if Natalie made it all the way till the final five and came in with the magical idol in her bag, it would like kind of be
like
freaking annoying, right? Yeah, because it's like then nothing that happened in the main game
What did it matter? If Rick Devins would have gone on to win, he got voted out on day 12 or whatever, and he came back in at the merge, and if he went on to win, that I would not have had any problem with that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know what? It's getting me worked up. I don't like the edge.
Okay. All right. Well, let's bring in a question. I got this from a couple of different people who wanted to know, Gabby, what Survivor reward would be best paired with milk?
No. Okay, I have to explain to people why I'm being asked this.
Yes. Okay. Explain this, and then I have a clip.
You have a clip?
Yes.
Is it Will Wall saying milk?
No. I have a guy here. Set up what's going on. Why are people asking about what should go with milk on Survivor?
Well, people are asking because yesterday on my Instagram, at GabsGoozy, I was posting Instagram story of my boyfriend, Charlie, and me having dinner, and he drinks, so embarrassing, oh my gosh, I don't know if I can say this in public, but he drinks milk with his meals.
Yes.
And it's very upsetting to me, and so I'm sure that's why I'm getting the questions, because I got many a DM yesterday about this.
All right. And you guys were having a nice, as Boston Rob would call it, a macaroni and red sauce dinner. And he was drinking a glass of milk. And you asked him about this, about what he was doing. And with your permission, that we've pulled the audio from this, Gabby.
Yes.
That's okay? We can play this? Okay.
Absolutely.
Milk with pasta?
You need milk. It's not as good without it.
That's how it is.
Wait, why do you like milk with your meals?
Because it complements the saltiness.
I've never heard of milk complementing saltiness.
It resets it. It's very neutral.
What? Water's neutral.
Mm-mm. Water is biased. By itself.
Wait, what?
I said I would never drink milk by itself. It's not good on its own.
You only like it with salty food?
Certain food, yeah.
What are some other examples of food?
Tuna.
Okay, all right, we're going to stop it there.
You have to stop it after tuna.
In the secret scene, I think that there was a part where Tony said, you know, the only thing that would go better with this shark is if I had a nice glass of milk. This milk, that what my water is biased. The milk is neutral.
Okay. Oh my gosh. Oh, this is so funny. I can't believe Charlie has already made his RHAP debut.
Yes.
And he This is, it took me years to get on RHAP, and Charlie just gets to come on because he drinks milk in my Instagram story.
Well, this is wild. This is wild, and we need to talk about this.
Yeah, we really do. I think we need to have a love know-it-alls special.
Love know-it-alls.
What do you do when you find out your boyfriend is a psychopath who drinks milk with his meals? Tuna. Like, so I didn't react in a big way in that video because he's told me before that he likes eating tuna with milk. And then what was worse is later on his like bookshelf, he found a can of tuna, like chunk light tuna. And I was like, why is this just on your bedroom shelf? Just like in case of emergencies. Oh, so funny. So yeah, maybe if while they were eating that shark steak, I don't know how similar shark is to tuna. Mm-hmm. If only they had had a tall glass of milk.
We've got a reward for you. You guys are going to have shark steaks, pasta, and to top it all off, ice cold milk. Worth playing for, Charlie?
Oh my gosh. Oh, so yeah, Charlie would be horrible on Survivor. So he has never really watched Survivor before. He like watched it starting with my season. And then when we were watching the first season, the first episode of Winners at War, the Edge of Extinction menu comes up. And whenever I watch Survivor, I'm like in game mode and I'm like, oh, that's so cool. Okay, you can buy an advantage to get back in the game. And he looks at the menu and he's like, oh, definitely I would buy the 6-pack of ice cold beer. I'm like yelling at him like, this is a game. You have to be able to think long term. And he's like, I definitely would go for the beer. And he's like not being funny. Mm-hmm. He absolutely would get the beer. So, you know, I know people sometimes are like, oh, would you ever do blood versus water? I would, but if I went with Charlie, like I could have no faith in him sending me good things from the Edge of Extinction because he would just be drinking milk and beer.
How many fire tokens for the ice cold milk?
He would pay all of them.
Well, it depends what else they're having.
Right. It can't be alone.
Yeah. It's got to be something salty for the to pair with the ice cold milk. Parvati also talked about having some strange eating habits. She was so upset with hearing that Adam was going to vote for her. This is what Parvati said she was going to do.
I'm ready to pounce on Adam, devour that guy, and just spit out his bones on Edge of Extinction.
Like, that's kind of dark, Parvati.
How does she think of those things? Like, that is imagery. I'm literally imagining like chicken wings when you eat all the meat off the bones and then you're like, patoo, like you spit the bones out.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty violent.
I feel like that if we go back through the history of Parvati confessionals, I do think that she does have some like dark imagery of things that she's going to do to different people.
It's like Survivor's the place to live out your alter ego, like, and hers is like a cannibal, possibly.
Well, I'm starting to think that maybe like Natalie Bolton in Survivor Fans vs. Favorites like started off like being like this like a really like nice, fun loving person, and then after hanging out with Parvati for a couple of weeks, that's when she's talking about that she's going to rip Jason Siska's jugular out and floss her teeth with it.
Yeah, that was such a that. Yeah, she was rubbed off on by Parvati.
Yeah. Okay. But you mentioned that you appeared on the Love Know-It-Alls, and I posited this to Steven the other night, that do you think that Michelle, that she too, like Natalie, also appeared on the Love Know-It-Alls with us. Do you think that she took anything away from the Love Know-It-Alls when she said this?
The people who make me feel really giddy, those are the people that I'm going to roll with.
Yes. She said the game is like dating. You have to find people that make you feel giddy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I actually took note of that, too. And I wondered if she's actually playing a really smart game of using analogies like that. Mm-hmm. And it adds to her, like, not seeming like a threat because she's just like, oh, I'm just a fun young girl. I just think about dating. I'm definitely not thinking about strategy. Like, I'm just going with who I vibe with, when I'm sure she is thinking, compared to like Yule or someone who might make a super highbrow analogy or like Sophie said, who's talking about physics or whatever. Does Will even work in physics?
No, but he might just enjoy physics as a hobby.
Yeah, exactly. So like maybe that's a good strategy of just saying, yeah, and everybody else kind of is older now and has kids and is married and is boring. And she's just like this young girl that's like, oh, I'm dating. So they're not seeing her as a threat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It would be funny if Yul gave that same sort of answer. Jeff, it's kind of like dating. You know, you're just trying to find somebody who makes you feel giddy. That would be the answer.
And he says it like in his Yul voice.
Yeah. Although
I think some people did use an analogy like that in the first. They were like, I feel like I'm being asked out on prom or something. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you guys have children. You're not attending prom anymore. This isn't like,
yeah.
Why do we use analogies that are so don't apply to us anymore?
I don't know. It did not work out great for Nora last season to constantly compare things to dating. People got annoyed with Nora when she kept doing that. But Elizabeth wrote in to say, and not Elizabeth Olsen, Elizabeth wrote in to say, I just want to let Gabby know that her appearance on the Love Know-It-Alls encouraged me to fix my bed frame, and I have had a sturdy off-the-floor bed for over a year now. Thank you for your inspiration.
Yes, ding. I know, I replied, that is my only useful contribution on Twitter, so... Glad that somebody is now not sleeping on the floor and hopefully putting that bed to good use.
Yes. Wow, wow. Okay. All right. Here is a question. I opened up we have a brand new RHAP Instagram account. It's at RHAP Grams, Rahap Grams. And we opened up the DMs today and said, hey, you could send us in a voice message on Instagram. Here is a message that came in for you from John.
Hey, Rob and Gabby, it's John from Philadelphia. First and foremost, Rob, I just wanted to say you're doing amazing on this season, man. Also, I'm really sorry about your wife, but you're going to kill it. Anyway, my question is in reference to something that Jeff called out during the challenge. As Jeremy was climbing up the ladder, Jeff made a point to claim that Jeremy was climbing the ladder firefighter style. Now, I don't know if there's a different way to climb a ladder besides going up, but maybe Jeff has insight into something that we don't. If you could clarify that for me, that'd be great. Thanks. Hope you do well in the season.
Yeah. Hey, thank you. Smarten up, John. Okay. Yes. So, Jeremy, this is how Jeff described him going up the ladder.
It's going to be Jeremy going up the ladder, firefighter style.
Yeah. Is there a special firefighter style to climbing up a ladder?
All right. I think you just meant like a firefighter, but actually that person's question made me think, aren't firefighters, isn't there a thing like they go down?
They go down a pole.
Oh, no. Oh, they go down a pole. Okay. There needs to be another challenge. We had one of those firefighter poles on my season and it's actually really scary. So maybe there is something to be said for like having that experience.
Yeah.
But yeah,
as a firefighter
style.
Jeff, I climb up ladders and go down poles all the time. That's like this game.
All the time.
You're up one day, you're down the next. And either way, it's hot. Yeah.
There's fire everywhere.
Yes.
We had Tony climbing up the ladder, and if only Jeff had been aware of Tony's previous ladder, then maybe he would have said like,
mm-hmm.
Tony's climbing up it,
yeah,
Tony style or whatever.
Jeff, as a cop that I have to go climb into dangerous situations all the time, are you a Tony fan, Gabby?
Yes, I am. He's one of my favorite winners entertainment value wise.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everybody wishes they could play like Tony, and
nobody can play like Tony. Tony is one of a kind. What did you make of Sarah sneaking into the other camp? Do you like it when Survivor has done this?
It was too long. I think you guys said that on the podcast. The only thing I took away from it was I so badly wanted there to be like a slapstick comedic moment where she just knocked all of the poles over and, like a cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
But since that didn't
like
happen,
Urkel?
It's like a little, like, yeah, it's a little less than
did
exciting.
I do that? Yeah.
I think I saw someone on Twitter ask would there be a downside or like strategy to like, is there a penalty for waking anybody up or talking to them? Like, what if she kind of like woke up, somebody said this, what if she woke up Denise and started like info exchanging? I just thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, I don't know who was judging that. At least when Vince had to go do it, it was like that Rob and Sandra like had to judge whether or not they brought back fire from the other camp.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there was a judge. I think she just had to get the advantage. So maybe it would just be the downside as people would then know she had an advantage.
Yeah,
and if
like,
they merged,
unless
they would
Denise like tackles her and takes it away from her, then I guess she gets away with it.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like heroes versus villains again.
Right, to bring it all back. Gabby, is there anything else about Survivor or about the world that you want to talk about?
Oh, no, I feel like I'm scrolling through my notes now, and I feel like we covered everything that I wanted to cover.
Yeah.
Things about the world. I won't make this partisan at all, but just while I have my soapbox, which is so rare, everybody should make sure they're registered to vote. So go to vote.gov and make sure you know how to register to vote in your state. That is the only little soapboxy thing
okay,
I wanted to
we're
say.
We're survivors. We know it's important to vote. Don't let
it's
Sarah Lucina steal your vote either.
Exactly.
She could steal your vote and then she'll get two votes.
Yeah. No, it's not allowed in the America system, thankfully.
Yeah, yeah, that happens.
Unless you're wearing a different hat.
It happens to people. Yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah, no, it's great talking to you as always.
Yeah, Gabby, so much fun. This was so great I loved everything that you had to say today, that we had a lot of fun. And I'm so glad that you came on and did this.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun too. I am also glad. And again, so cool. I just can't get over the meta aspect of like Rupert was just on. I'm in this weird world where Rob Sestrino played a clip of my boyfriend drinking milk. Like mm-hmm. I don't even understand what just happened over the past hour and a little under 2 hours, but I loved it.
Gabby, do you think that people will come out of the woodwork and say, I stand with Charlie that milk does go great with foods that are salty? I'm not sure why was the macaroni so salty?
No, just it wasn't like it was salty. I was like, it's weird that you like milk with I should have said savory food, because you would usually think you eat it with milk and cookies or like a brownie.
Yeah, that's what I like.
PB&J.
Yeah.
So people already have. I've had a lot of people replying to my Instagram story, unfortunately, much more than I would have wanted. I would have wanted the number to be zero.
People say, I do that. I stand with Charlie.
Yes, people were. The only one people didn't agree with was tuna.
Yeah.
People were like, yeah, me too. Pasta with milk. And I'm like, you guys can start a little group.
Yes. Okay.
We can have milk drinkers versus non-milk drinkers on the next season.
As a non-milk drinker, as a person that is lactose intolerant, I can't be around anybody who drinks milk and eats tuna.
Yeah, it's just wrong.
Yes. Do you think anybody will step up and say, I stand with Charlie. I'm also a milk and tuna person.
If they do, I will send them a can of tuna and a box of milk myself. Like,
yeah,
we'll see how good that stands up in the mail. Yeah. But I highly doubt it. That's, you know, I used to say I used to do this in college. I have weird food tastes too, so yes. I really can't be too harsh on him. In college, when I used to order a pizza to like my dorm room, because people would always want to get a slice of your pizza, I would order pizza with mushrooms and anchovies because those are two of my favorite ingredients, and they're also two of the most divisive ingredients, so that nobody would want to share with me. So really, I have no room to speak on weird things to be eaten. So really, I found a good match in Charlie with our weird things that we like to eat.
Okay. All right. Well, Gabby, of course, thank you again so much. Anything else that you want to tell people to check out? Are you on Cameo?
I'm not on Cameo. I don't plan to be. And if I did, I probably would do, like Reem was saying, like $20. I can't believe anybody actually wants to talk to me. Probably donate half of it to charity. If people would want that, I would donate it to charity, then I guess tweet at me at Gabby Pascuzzi. I would open it if people wanted to, but no, I'm team Reem. I messaged her after your podcast with her because she killed me when she was talking about people. We are not celebrities. Mm-hmm. Like we, people meaning us, fellow players, like don't get your head so big. I met her. She's very cool, down to earth. She's a neat lady. And, I'm not on Cameo, but I'm on Twitter at Gabby Pascuzzi.
Okay. Gabby, a lot of people wanted to know about your Halo Top ice cream that we talked about the last time out. And you compared the survivors to ice cream flavors last time that you were on. Do you have any people that off the top of your head you would compare them to an ice cream flavor?
Oh, no.
We know that Charlie is already milk and tuna.
He's a milk and tuna flavor. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we have, Nick and Kim this past episode, they were like ube. Ube is a Filipino purple yam.
Yes.
So that's their flavor.
Okay. All right. Gabby, thank you again so much. And looking forward to catching up again sometime.
Yeah, you too. Thanks, Rob.
Everybody, there you have it. What a nice chat with Gabby Pascuzzi here on the podcast. Hope you guys enjoyed that one. I thought that was a lot of fun, covered a lot of stuff, had some fun, and the really fun feedback show this week. All right. So next up for you is we got Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast coming up on Saturday. Spun a wheel of ideas. Got season 3, episode 7, Fishbowl. Going to talk about season 3, episode 7 of The Brady Bunch. If you have any idea what I'm talking about, that's what's coming up on Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast. And then we will be back with This Week in Survivor, which we actually recorded last night with Brent Wolgamont. That will be coming up for you. We're going to drop that for you Sunday night, so you have that for Monday morning when you're headed back to work. And then we'll get into the Wiggle Room with Josh Wiggler and all of your wand off entries this week. You can send them in to wiggleroom@robhasawebsite.com. And of course, where we have so much discussion about everything that's going on in the world of Survivor, the world of RHAP, in our Rob is a Podcast patron Facebook community. Going to be having a Facebook Saturday this week because I recorded with Gabby on our Friday night. So much coming up. robhasawebsite.com/patron if you want to get in on that. Again, pro tip, if you're listening to this on Saturday, wait till Sunday if you want to sign on to become a patron on the first of the month. That way you get a whole month to try it out and see if you like it. robhasawebsite.com/patron. Take care, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. Have a good one. Bye.